Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the debut of CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime, to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private eye and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, and Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there, on the top of the crime, at the top of their game. CrimeWire is the place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. You can also join our live chat going on right now or email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. If you'd like us to consider a case for a future show, we welcome your questions and comments. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the debut of CrimeWire. Guys, we're here.
Yes, we are.
Great.
I'm the taller one, though, so there's no mistake out of the three of us.
And, God, it's been a long time coming, and I'm really excited about it.
You know, Susan,
Vito, yes, sir.
Like that, something came to me a little while ago, and I like to share it with the listeners and for everybody. You know, this show is going to be so different from anything you're going to see on television or hear on the radio, and here's why. What goes on in the radio and TV covering what is called high-profile cases, Haley Cummings, things of that nature, okay? And, you know, we've all been on those shows where every other night it's an update on what's going on those cases. And that's all well and good. It's captured the public's imagination. But you see, high profile, everybody that's lost a loved one, someone's been murdered, someone's been raped, guess what? Those are all high profile cases for all those families involved. So to limit it to just one case, and what they do is fine. And I'm not. This is not a knock against any of the shows that every night do the same stories, okay, because it's captured the public's imagination. But what we're doing, and Denny can say, we've already seen the results of numerous people calling us, and you hate to use the term begging, but asking us to please, please look at their cases. Please, we'll send you the police files. Please, look into this. Help us, help us, help us in any way possible, because those are high-profile cases to each and every family involved. So we're going to try to cover so many cases as the week goes by, at least to bring it to light, to study it ourselves, and just keep it continually on our website, which is going to be an unbelievable website. So I just wanted to share that with the listeners. This is going to be a totally different type of show.
I mean, Denny, you too. I mean, we both get these cases. People send us emails. I mean, you get bombarded every week, don't you?
I certainly do, Susan. And the story, I mean, they're all different cases, but there's a common thread that I find, and it's a great deal, I would say, frustration. The people who have been involved with the system, with the loss of a loved one, and can't get answers to their questions. And a lot of them think they've been victimized twice. They were victimized by the loss of their loved one, and they get into the system, they can't get answers, and it's very frustrating for them. They think that's their second time of being victimized is when they deal with the system. And it's some very heart-wrenching cases out there that of what some of these folks have to go through.
And we all talk about them, we all blog about them, we all are on the radio with them, we're all on the national news programs with them, and it is heart-wrenching. And there doesn't seem to be a solution, but we want to hope that everybody listening will refer people when they know something or hear something. You've got Web Sleuths, a fantastic site. You've also got HelpFindTheMissing.org, another fantastic site. And these two sites post up information for crime victims and their families, but we want to, as Vito said, take it further. So if you know somebody or if you see somebody posting a case and it's cold and no one's been able to find answers, many of the people, including the experts that are coming on, they're going to be on board every week with us. Every week these people are going to be with us. And they're going to be the consultants for CrimeWire. And they're going to offer their insights and hopefully, you know, information that you can use, because that's what this is about. As Pat Caruso had said, who's coming on a little bit, that information is the key, and that's the key for these families. So I think that we need to move on, Denny, because we have an hour-packed show, so why don't you take it away?
Yes. For the next few minutes, we're going to be talking about a subject that is has the interest of lots of people who have gone through the loss of a loved one, a violent loss. And that is the role of medical examiners and coroners in death investigations and what the determinations of these folks mean to the case, how the case is handled, how the case progresses, and the impact it has on the families and their lives, actually. And I think there's some confusion about exactly what the coroner or medical examiner's offices do, and tonight we're going to get into that, at least start it. And we have a guest with us who's going to help us with that. From Citizens Against Homicide, Mr. Gene Cervantes. Gene, welcome to CrimeWire.
Thank you, Denny. It's a pleasure.
And would you tell us a little bit about Citizens Against Homicide and what you folks do?
Well, Citizens Against Homicide is an organization founded by Jane Alexander, who passed away a year ago, December. Citizen Jane, she was also noted as, and Jan Miller, whose daughter was murdered 25, 26 years ago in California, Chico, California. They got tired of the, grief sessions and decided to be proactive and started the Citizens Against Homicide organization, and our website is citizensagainsthomicide.org. The host of information on there as to what we do, I could tell you right out front that we deal exclusively with homicide cases. I believe it was Vito's comment that people are constantly calling and calling and calling and begging for help. And there are cases where the ME medical examiners have said suicide, accidental, in spite of overwhelming evidence that would indicate otherwise. And we have to tell them there's nothing we can do to help them. We guide them through the system and tell them that there are some options available, but a lot of those options are beyond their reach financially. And so I encourage people to go to the website, get a better idea, because I could talk for 2 hours on our
website. Why don't you give us the website, please?
CitizensAgainstHomicide.org. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's our website.
I mean, Vito, you see this all the time. You see, you know, the families, and how wonderful is this that we're going to have Gene and their cases on board with us?
Oh, this is great. You know, it's really a blessing to have these organizations across the country. They have given people hope. You know, as our show goes on in a few weeks, we're going to have some South cases where we're going to hear a mother and different people talk about, to hopefully give people the hope to let them see that, hey, these things do get solved, some of them, okay, to give the people the hope instead of a depressing type of a thing of there's no hope out there. Well, there is, and for somebody like Gene and other people, these are great, great organizations that really keep these things out there.
And Denny, you know, you too, you see this all day long.
Absolutely, and somebody mentioned earlier, I believe Pat, that we'll be talking to in a little bit, that information is the name of the game. And it's, you know, when I used to be in sales years and years and years ago, they always told me that customer service was a big thing and that you needed to respond to concerns of, in this case, customers. Well, you have people in a situation with a lot different than buying an appliance that doesn't work, who are fighting the system, and it's really scary to me, actually, the number of stories I hear where a police agency or a governmental agency will not respond to the victim's family and provide them with answers, with guidance, and with help. And that, I mean, they're going through enough as it is, and then you compound that with the inability, apparently, by some of these agencies to respond and to want to help, and that just that makes a horrible situation even worse. And
you know, Denny,
it's frustrating.
Can I piggyback on that? You know, I get calls on that same issue. They say I'm not getting any phone calls. So when I make contact with the law enforcement agency that's investigating a particular homicide, I tell them, do you realize how important it is to the family that all they want is a phone call? If you have nothing to give them, tell them that. But they're preoccupied with other things.
But, Gene, on your site, on the website, do you have a list of what you tell folks that are first time, you know, coming onto the site, say this is what you have to do right away, this is what you need to do and be persistent? Is that information there?
That comes from us, Victim Advocate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when they call you, that's what you. Let's say I'm calling right now, and something's just happened tragically, and the case is about a year old. I just can't get any more answers. I mean, I know that case is in the drawer. I call them, you know, every day sometimes, and I know that these officers are getting pissed off. So what do you tell me as a family member that I need to do maybe a little differently?
Well, I would run interference for you in that case, and then I would the caller to maybe take a look at the possibility of going above his or her head, the investigator's head, and talk to the supervisor of that person, and write letters. Just be persistent. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, and then when you finally make contact, tell them how important it is for you to be contacted, and just say, don't victimize me again.
What about the families with a website? Do you encourage that or help them put that up as well?
I'm sorry?
A website. Do you encourage or assist the families of missing loved ones, unsolved crimes, to put up a website on the Internet?
No, I don't. I would if the question was ever posed. My belief is any information, any publicity is good.
Yeah, because they don't know. I mean, Vito, you and I talked about this last week. They don't know, and how important is the Internet in this?
Oh, to me, Susan, you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, very, very important. I think the more, like Gene just said, the more publicity out there. I had my new client today in a big picture spread in the New York Post on a case, the ex-wife of Bobby Bonilla, the former Major League All-Star. And she needed to get things out in the public, and she went to the New York Post and presented it. Now, that's not a murder case or something like that, but still, that what needs to happen. And a lot of times you can't get into the New York Post or the big newspapers like that, but you can get on these sites and you can get on all these victims things and all the crime shows, the radio shows, and you keep it fresh. I'm a very firm believer in keeping cases fresh, because they will, just like a vegetable or something, they will die and perish if you don't.
We have a question in the chat room. It says, this is to Gene, does police policy include periodic communication once a week, once a month, et cetera, to say, we don't have anything, but your case is still open?
There is no set time frame. It's just a matter of my agreement with the law enforcement agency that I've contacted. I make a little notation that says, I'll call you back in a month, or I'll call you back. Depending on the circumstances of the investigation, and then I say, well, then I'll call you back in a week because it sounds hot, or there's nothing, so I'll call you back in a month, and then I follow through and So it's a kind of a case by case.
Susan?
Yes.
Excuse me, I think we might have Bill Sullivan on the line.
Okay, we
I
do.
Am. I am.
Bill?
Yes.
Yes, for introductory purposes, Bill is one of the consultants to CrimeWire, and he runs a business out of Syracuse, New York, called Forensic Consulting Specialties. Bill, welcome to CrimeWire, and welcome to the CrimeWire debut show.
Well, I'm glad to be aboard, and I've been listening intently for the last 5 or 10 minutes, and one thing I want to bring up right away is when you talk about calling the police departments and trying to get that investigator to call you back or let him know that the family is hurting and wants answers, don't forget your coroner and your medical examiner. And do not accept, well, the police told me it was a suicide or the police said it was an accident. The coroner or medical examiner in almost all states has the legal responsibility to fill out a death certificate stating the cause and manner, whether it's an accident, a suicide, or a homicide, or can they make a determination? And that's where the legal jurisdiction really falls. Now, he may do it in conjunction with a police agency, but that's another agency that has to be accountable to the public, whether he be elected as a coroner may be in some states or appointed as a medical examiner is in some other states. So that's another agency you want to be knocking on their door and demanding answers.
So let me ask you this. You and I have talked in the past. What exactly, now obviously by jurisdiction, there's going to be little differences in the authority, perhaps, and the duties. But generally speaking, are all coroners or medical examiners regulated? Does it depend strictly on the jurisdiction, or is there kind of national guidelines that everybody follows? Who controls these people? Who supervises them? And if you got a beef about their decision, if you don't agree with the decision they make, and they won't talk to you, or they won't reopen or take a second look or examine new evidence, what can a person do?
Sure. Each jurisdiction is different. Some have statewide systems. Some are countywide systems. Florida has districts of medical examiners down in their state. So each and every state and area is different in the country. That's the first thing you need to do is find out what is the jurisdiction of your coroner, medical examiner, death investigator, whatever. Secondly, they all have the same purpose, and that is to investigate the circumstances surrounding a death, which really encompasses 3 or 4 different basic things. One is identifying the deceased. Who is this person, and can we prove it medically? The second one is to establish some estimate of time of death, which I don't have to explain to everybody is extremely important, especially in homicide cases. And then third would be the medical cause or violent cause of death. The medical illness that stopped this or violence that stopped this person from living. And the fourth thing is it an accident, a suicide, or homicide? So no matter what you call it, whether it's a coroner or medical examiner, by statute, they all have the same duty and function. Now, the interesting thing you asked in that question, Denny, is are there federal guidelines? And the answer to that is yes and no. The National Association of Medical Examiners has some guidelines for members of its association. In 1978 through 1980, the Federal Justice Department tried to write a book called Federal Guidelines for Coroners and Medical Examiners. I was one of the authors of that book. What was the first thing that was done by the Justice Department was scrapped it and called it guidelines rather than any implement of laws and restrictions, knowing they had no way of enforcing it. So, yes, there are some guidelines, and for instance, Illinois has a coroner's system, and it has one of the best coroner's systems. In parts of Illinois, they have mandatory training for their coroners, mandatory reoccurring education. And in other areas, there are medical examiners that have no mandatory training or retraining. So doesn't matter what you call it. Again, it's who's at the head of the system. And if you're a family that you feel that a death has been misclassified, you need to speak to the coroner or the medical examiner plus the police.
Would you know, this is Susan, is there a way for a family to petition the courts to get the medical examiner to reopen an investigation for the cause of death?
Again, in each state it's a little bit different. For instance, in Illinois still holds inquests into accidents, suicides, and homicides. So,
like my favorite Drew Peterson case. Inquest. You know, they got it wrong the first time, in my opinion, with Kathleen Savio, who Drew Peterson goes up for trial on in a couple of weeks. And the inquest was all botched up. Now they revisited it, the grand jury. But I'm saying that I've seen cases where a family member wants to have that case change, the status change,
sure.
And maybe they live in Washington. And they want to legally somehow, maybe through their right, to petition a court system, even though the case is closed, for the coroner or the medical examiner to reopen it. Is that a possibility?
Yes, it is. And, for instance, you can, through civil suit, sue the coroner or medical examiner asking that the death certificate be changed. Or, as I've seen done right here in Syracuse, New York, where information was presented to the coroner in Onondaga County, he looked at the new information, simply by swipe of his pen, changed the ruling from suicide to homicide or to accident or to undetermined by amending a death certificate. It took no other thing to do it.
I'd like to comment on that. You know, sure, you could petition. In California, you could petition the Superior Court to order a case reopened for investigation. But that's what I was talking about earlier when I talked about financially. It's beyond the means of most families that call. Yeah, you can sue the coroner, but again, it's a financial hardship for families to do this, and oftentimes, the coroners, the medical examiners, surround themselves with the people that can protect them. And I don't say that very easily, because I strongly suspect that there are some coroners, medical examiners around the United States that are just not competent.
You are absolutely 100% correct.
How do we get them competent?
How do we make government competent is what you're asking me, because they're
yes,
a branch of government, and that's always been a dilemma.
Well, my thought, and I've been researching how I could go about it, is if there are any legislators out there, please consider establishing or introducing legislation that would provide oversight, federal oversight of medical examiners.
Maybe that's a good cause for CrimeWire to kind of take under their wing a little bit. Maybe we can start something going. Maybe you can help us with that.
Well, I have kind of differing opinion on that one. I can recall a case in my career where a federal jurisdiction was taken on a body because it was a federal employee, and they kicked us off the scene of death and said, we're going to handle this. And we said, okay, let us know how you come out. First of all, you have no federal ability to sign a death certificate at that time. And secondly, how are you going to conduct an autopsy and where are you going to conduct it? And the federal government hadn't thought far enough ahead to realize that they didn't have those capabilities. So a lot of discussion could be done there. We want to help families, and that's what we ought to be talking about tonight.
And that's important. And but maybe even, Gene, maybe you can help us come up with something, maybe, you know, draft it initially, and we can take it and put it out there every week and get people, you know, involved, and maybe through some of the missing person sites or the unsolved homicide sites that are out there besides yours, we can kind of come up with a little firepower.
I'd be glad to. Just give me some direction, you know, and yeah, I'd be glad to.
We have our resident public relations person from Imagine Publicity, Delilah, who I know that she doesn't expect this, but I'm going to pull her in. So she's going to get a hold of you, Gene, and we're going to go forward and do some things that perhaps, you know, we might get the ball rolling in a way that will help families in a different way, because as Vito and Denny and I all see, these cases, a lot of them, and the one we're bringing up next week, one that's kind of not been heard of. And what we're going to do is the medical examiner, I think, did not.
Thank you for using your STI prepaid phone card.
Okay. Wow. Whoever that is, I can't get him off.
I know we got to move on here in a second. Gene and Bill, I want to thank you guys so much. And let me just say before we move on to the next segment is I'll be in touch with both of you and also Delilah, who Susan just mentioned, and we'll try to put a plan together here to see what we can do to generate interest in this topic. And there's no doubt, we just scratched the surface a little bit tonight, that we'll have another segment on this in the future. And if anybody out there has questions or comments about this particular issue, as Susan mentioned, please go to the CrimeWire site. You can contact us through there with our emails. Tell us what you want us to do on this, questions you have, and we'll certainly follow up on them. Again, Bill and Gene, thank you so much.
Thank you, Denny.
Thank you for having me.
I think, guys, that chat room is filled. Area code 316, you're on the air.
Record your message. When you have finished recording, yes.
Yes.
My name is, I am calling on the Sheila Devaney case that is from Garvin County. She was murdered 5 years ago in January. And we cannot get anyone, I'm her aunt, and we've tried to get it in for a preliminary hearing. They are a small community. I don't know whether you're familiar with it. It's Maysville, Oklahoma. And I don't know whether you're familiar with that area. And her home burnt.
Ma'am, you need to turn off your speaker because you're coming back through. On the radio
I don't have a radio. I'm in Kansas. I don't have anything on.
Okay. Well, we hear something come back. That's okay.
I'm on a cell phone now. That could.
Okay.
Could that be it? Maybe.
That might be. I have a suggestion though. Why don't you? Do you have an internet account, like a Gmail or an AOL account that you have? Your personal one.
I can call you on my landline.
No, that's not what I mean. For your loved one's case. Why don't you put together the information, and you can also send it to the CrimeWire team, and we can look at it for you with a contact number.
Okay, I'm not available for anything like that right now.
Okay.
But my sister, Susan Devaney, is she lives there in Maysville. And she just called me, and I know she's going to try to get through to you all. So that she can ask you some questions on this, that basically we're trying to get them to hang on to her for all the forensic things that they took, because they tried to say it was an accident to begin with, and then we found out that she was murdered. She was set afire, and then her home was set afire, and she burns to death in it. And
Gene Cervantes, wait, hold on a minute. Gene Cervantes, are you still on the air with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey,
okay,
hey,
you can
Susan,
hear her. Can you answer? Yes.
Susan, just to let you know, Mickey and
Linda is my name.
Can't get through. Okay.
Okay. You know what? We need to. We're not. Can you take down this information? Can you? Can you? And then we can have you have somebody send us the information, and then we'll address this because we need to move on with the show. Not that we need to move on with your case, but we'll address it privately so we can move on with the show. How's that?
That is absolutely great.
Okay,
we just want to get some attention out there.
Okay.
We are,
we've been trying for that, and we're going to try to do that for you. If you, it's just thecrimewire@gmail.com. That's all you have to do. So tell Susan, your relative, to do that, and bless you, and thank you so much for calling in.
Just CrimeWire is all I need to know.
Thecrimewire@gmail.com, ma'am.
Gmail.com, and that's all I need to do.
That's
and
right.
Everything will work out if she does that.
Thank you.
All right. We'll do that.
Right.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. Okay. We're waiting for other people to call in. The board is lit up, and you know we're not able to take other people that are calling in, so I've had to get rid of a couple of people. I'm sorry, because I have to see the numbers pop on the board. That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, that's an interesting insight, and I think we have area code 727. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hello. I'm listening to the radio. My name is Deborah Edney. I'm Joey Turner's aunt. Pat Calisto told me that she was coming on at 9:35.
And she is, ma'am, and our board is filled up. And if you want to email us with your case, please do so.
Yeah, you've had it on the show before, Joey Turner.
Okay.
And
okay.
I just was going to stay on the line in case when she came on there because she emailed me and told me she was going to be on the show.
Okay. I'm going to mute you, so thank you very much.
Okay, great. Now just stay on there.
Tell me what area code you're from. I just lost you.
That's okay. 727.
Thank you. All right. They're on. Mickey's on.
203 area code.
He's on.
Okay. Mickey. Hello?
Hold on a minute now.
Hello.
It's 203 area code.
I got it. He's on now.
I hear you guys fine.
Mickey.
Yeah, I'm here.
Mick, you hear me?
I hear you fine.
I'm sorry about the delay. We got it's standing room only tonight. Which is
it's been great. I've been out here on the red carpet.
Yeah.
Really great. What a turnout, I'm telling you. And Lindsay Lohan knows how to party, I got to tell you.
Well, listen, I'm going to give a little introduction for our listeners. Mickey Sherman is a friend of mine for 35 years at least. I met Mickey when he was a prosecutor and I was a narcotics cop, and we've become good friends over the years. And I'm holding in my hand his best-selling book, How Can You Defend Those People? And, you know, looking at this book, your listeners need to know, you know, some people write a book and they get Joe Smith, their neighbor, or Bobby Jones, the kid that mows their lawn, to write on their book. Just to give you a couple things on Mickey's here, people that have written on his cover here. Dominic Dunn.
Blurbs.
Dominic Dunn. Barry Levinson, the Academy Award director of Rain Man, Good Morning Vietnam, Diner, Bugsy, Wags the Dog, and a movie that Mickey was in, and Justice for All. He has Nancy Grace on the back cover here, and William Bratton, the Los Angeles Chief of Police. And on the front cover, James Patterson, the best-selling author. So, I mean, Mickey has done all of the shows for everybody, and truthfully, he got me started about 8 years ago, and like he tells me all the time, he's created a monster in me.
I invented a monster.
Mick, welcome to the show tonight. Can you hear me, Mick?
He's got red carpet cell phone itis there going on.
Well, while he's getting a better signal, you know, Mickey is married to the very lovely and famous Lise Wheel from Fox News, who I know was on tonight at 8 o'clock on Bill O'Reilly's show. and she's on regularly on Fox on a daily basis. And I had the opportunity to be at their wedding a couple of years ago and talk about a red carpet event. Everybody that was anybody was there. We're sitting there, and the wedding is starting, and who's singing at Mickey Sherman and Lisa's wedding? Stands up, Michael Bolton sings When a Man Loves a Woman. So that was a little example of the type of affair that was. But he's a good guy, and he's helped a lot of people over the years. And I don't know if he has coverage from where he's standing right now. Mickey.
Yeah, I hear you fine. I just don't want to interrupt.
No.
I can do this all night.
Mick, why don't you tell us a little bit? I think you said before Lisa's maybe tied up over at Fox, but why don't you tell the viewers
Lisa's
a little
new
bit
book.
About her book?
Lisa's new book is Hand of Fate, and she would be on tonight, but she's doing O'Reilly tonight. She's on her way back from the city. But it's the second in a series of, it's going to be seven by the time it's over, fiction books. Based on three women who solved the big cases, and it's really terrific. The first one made the bestseller list, and this one's been doing great as well. It's called A Hand of Fate by Lisa Wheel.
Yeah, and I know, Mick, from some of her other previous ones, how they've gone right up on Amazon and the best-selling list. And I remember several times she was like number three in sales and number eight and the whole bit, so that's very exciting for her. And all I read is rave reviews about her writing. So say the name of that new book again, Mick.
Hand of Fate. It's about the murder of a talk show host, a radio talk show host, in the nature of Bill O'Reilly or Mark Levin or Sean Hannity or Alan Berg. And then it's a whodunit as to who killed him.
Okay, Mick, maybe a quick comment. We've been talking about medical examiners and different situations, and we know that the vast majority have done great work across the country. Have you ever found, though, Mick, that you've been at odds with, like, a medical examiner or coroner about some of their findings and maybe have not felt they've gone the extra yard and they've just taken maybe the police point of view without looking into it too much?
Well, you know, the first time I ever met Michael Bodden was before, you know, that was probably about 25 years ago, and a man had been retrieved from the East River, the Hudson River in New York, and his wife felt that he had been murdered, and they'd listed his death as a suicide, and we got Michael to do another autopsy, and they changed the finding and made it a homicide.
That's what we're talking about here, Mick, and that's why we have the pleasure of having you down as one of our consultants, just to encourage people out there that the police maybe sometimes, and I'm not saying all the time, the police do a heck of a job, but once in a while there is a little rush to judgment.
Well, it can get worse than that. Maybe Susan, you'll know who was there was that woman was in Oklahoma or someplace down there who was falsifying all the forensics on death cases.
Oh, you know, I know who it is.
Do you remember? I mean, she perjured herself. She falsified information. It was just amazing. She would just because she wanted everybody to be convicted.
Yeah, I her name escapes me.
Joyce Gilchrist.
Yes, that's it. Was it Joyce Gilchrist?
Yes.
Is that Denny?
This is Shannon Kyle from Wynnewood, Oklahoma. I didn't know you could actually hear me speaking.
I heard you. I know the world heard you. So hopefully she's the right person, otherwise you're getting sued. Just kidding. No, But wasn't there a horrific scene, though? Weren't there many people who almost went to death row because of this woman?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. And that's what we need to do. We need to give families hope sometimes when they know that they know that they know that their loved one did not commit suicide. Okay? And a lot of times, Mick, I have found what the police say, and I don't go by it. Many times the police will say, well, look, Mr. Father or Mother of the victim, if you gather any other information, bring it back to us and we'll take a look at that. But what the public doesn't realize, they're basically telling you to go hire a private detective, go hire an attorney, putting out thousands of dollars that family may not have, to do an investigation just to try to get the case looked at again, right, Mick?
Yeah, it's horrible. But I don't think it happens that much, but when it does, it's not like a minor thing. You're talking about the death of your child, your uncle, your brother, your husband, your wife. It's just a sad subject to begin with, and then you've got to go spend money to second-guess the people who should be doing their jobs.
Well, and, you know, in the chat room, there's a couple of people that say that you are one of the most coolest and most laid-back lawyers ever, and you do have a tremendous respect for Colin by a lot of people.
Some people think that's called also incredibly lazy. And meanwhile, to answer the question you had, Vito, because I was listening to the show, it's easy to get in the New York Post. Just screw up.
That's for sure.
Hey, are you folks aware of all the stuff that's actually going on in Oklahoma right at this particular time? I heard the lady calling in from Kansas about her loved one in Maysville. Are you guys, would you like to hear a short version of what's actually going down in Oklahoma even as we speak?
Define short.
1 minute.
Could you give me the Reader's Digest version of it?
I beg your pardon?
Go ahead.
Digest version?
Yeah, I'm also calling from the same county as that lady who spoke about the Devaney case, Garvin County, which is in south central Oklahoma, about an hour south of the capital, Oklahoma City. Small farming communities like Winniewood, Maysville, Elmore City, and we have had an enormous amount of so-called suicides fitting a certain stereotype of a small-town cover-up. The oldest is one from Elmore City, Shanda Turner. It's 10 years old. There's the Maysville case, the Sheila Devaney case. There's a retired teacher from Winniewood named Tom Horton. All these cases have one thing in common. Same medical examiner, technician, worked all the cases. One of the cases, Shanda Turner, was exhumed after 10 years. Her cause of death was changed in the process of being changed by the sitting medical examiner, Colley Trant, who was subsequently fired by his medical legal board. Oklahoma has lost their accreditation, and they're just kind of floundering.
Why don't we do this?
This is the same jurisdiction that Joyce Gilchrist was in?
Yes, sir, it is the same jurisdiction.
I mean, what are the odds of that?
Well, Oklahoma's in trouble right about now. They used to be the gem of the Midwest, had the best forensic pathology west of the Mississippi, and what happened?
Can you do me a favor, sir? Can you also email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com because our board is flooded and we'll follow up with you and move forward on this? How's that?
We would absolutely be more than happy to do that. We have a lot to say here from Garvin County, Oklahoma.
Well, we'll put you on for a whole show. God bless you for calling in, and thank you.
Thank you. I'll take you up on that. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, Mick, I think we're going to move ahead. We got like Donna Pendergast and a whole bunch of people waiting to give their come on here a little bit. But see, what this is showing all of us tonight, Susan, is how much hurting things are out there in the public. Look, we're overflowed tonight. People are calling. They want us to hear them out the whole bit. So this is why this show is going to be totally different. It's not just jumping on a Haley coming.
Now, wait a minute. Now you're going to make me do 2 hours now. Come on.
Yeah, we may have to. But Mickey, thank you very much. And we'll
no problem. And Vito, while you were just talking, the Goodwill Industries people called. They want to know which bin you stole that hat out of from the picture.
Yeah,
could you please return it?
Denny threw it away. I took it out of the garden.
That was a good move.
Well, Mickey, thank you very much.
No problem. I'm going back to the red carpet. They're just serving drinks there again now. This is great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Susan, can we get Pat Carisco in there?
Yes, we got it.
Pat,
yes,
welcome to the show. And Pat is a private investigator out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she was formerly with the Philadelphia Police Department and also was a detective at the University of New Mexico Police Department. Pat is going to be one of our consultants to CrimeWire. And, Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about your company?
Well, NIA is a traditional private investigations agency, but over the years we started doing unsolved cases for families. And as has been mentioned, those cases are so expensive that families cannot afford to do them. So we do them at no charge to the families. And we've actually been able to get the medical investigator, what it's called here in New Mexico, on a couple of cases to change the determination from one thing to another by presenting a good factual report. But there are so many issues, and I know you don't have the time, but critical thing is the time of death. Are two things. Is not the time that it was pronounced, but we need to know the time of occurrence. When did this happen? There may be hours difference, and that's very critical in an investigation. And then what is the role of the investigator in making that determination? Sometimes the investigator isn't present at an autopsy, so they're not getting any feedback from the field. And then the role of the private investigator when you come in later. We do come in. We do ask some questions. We're able to get consults with the medical investigator, at least here in New Mexico. We're able to ask some questions, and we can get the families some help. And Deborah Ebney was on. She's one of the families that done hours and hours and hours and months and months and months of work on her nephew's case. And
I think, if we could, Patricia, I think that we need Pat. She's on right now. If she wants to say something really quick to you, I guess.
Sure, sure.
And she's got her speakers on. Deborah?
Yes.
Okay, Pat's on if you want to ask her a question. And please turn down your speaker on your computer.
Okay, I'll walk away from it. All right.
You wanted to ask Pat a question?
Yeah, she was going to talk about Joey, and she was going to talk about, you know, what she has found out or what's going on, and I was going to listen to her and then ask her a question after I heard what she had to say.
Okay. Pat?
Well, to go into the whole case would take too long, and I know you have lots, and we may be able to do it another time. But Joey was a young man, 20 years old, 4th of July, on a boat, ends up in the water. It's ruled a drowning, has a head injury. No one can tell us whether the head injury was sustained before he went into the water or after he went into the water, as the driver of the boat claims that he swung around and hit him in the head. Some resources to tell me when the body doesn't come up onto the beach for 8 to 10 hours later. 20 hours later, excuse me.
20 hours later, and the autopsy report, Dr. Thogmartin said that his injuries were compared to being hit with a flat-hulled boat. But I have pictures. I have pictures with an attorney that asked for those pictures where it clearly shows multiple head blunt trauma that had a pattern to it. It is impossible for a flat-hulled boat to cause such dippling injuries to his head. There was swelling
so minimal. Families have these kinds of questions, and they cannot get answers. And another interesting point in Joey's case is that where he goes off the boat, and 20 hours later, his body is washed up on the shore in exactly the same location. That happen with tide
flow? Bob Ford from the National Transportation Safety Bureau said it's impossible. The only way that Joey's body could have come up in that location is if they secured the body at that site or removed the body and brought the body back. It's impossible, he said.
Have these kinds of cases that are beyond a basic level, there is no way for families to get answers. I have another case here in Albuquerque, an 18-year-old boy, suicide, they say, shot twice in the head with a shotgun. I have questions about how you can shoot yourself twice in the head.
Precisely.
I don't want to be rude, but we're running out of time. We got two or three more guests. Listen, why don't, Pat, in the future, let's, on a show down the road, let's get these cases on, and we can spend more time and give Deborah and the other family members of the other cases more time to explain their positions, and you can tell us what you found.
Great.
And,
I
want to
and Deborah,
yes.
What we can do for you, Deborah, is you email us. We'll get you on a show with Pat for a good segment so that we can go through this a little bit more. How's that?
Fantastic.
All right, I have to get you off the board because, again, we need other
That's
callers
great.
To come in.
Or give somebody else a turn. No problem.
All right, thank you.
Thanks,
all right,
thanks Deborah.
I'm sorry, Pat. Go ahead.
No problem.
And may I just mention, too, anybody who wants more information on Pat and her agency and the type of work they do, and she mentioned pro bono, if you go to the CrimeWire website and click on our consultant and friends page, there'll be a link to Pat's website there. And you'll be able to find out how to contact her and get all the information.
And thanks for having me just do two of the kinds of questions that people ask.
Thank you,
thank,
Pat.
Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you very much. I'm going to say God bless you, because that's what I do. So, okay. I am really proud to have and introduce the next person because she can hear me talk. And she's with Women in Crime, Inc., .blogspot.com. She is also the Assistant Attorney General for the Michigan Department of Attorney General's Office. She successfully prosecuted more cases, with, you know, from serial murders to soup to nuts. I mean, she is one of the best criminal career prosecutors in this country. Donna Pendergast, welcome to CrimeWire.
Delighted to be aboard, Susan. Absolutely delighted.
And what's so cool about this is that you're on board and part of the team. You have successfully, like I said, prosecuted a lot of these cases, even when there's been no body. And I had read an article earlier that said that it was interesting. It was a quote from you about how the these cases, juries love the forensic information. Do they really digest the forensics?
They do. You know, our society is so TV attuned and so expecting of forensic evidence that, quite frankly, in some of the colder cases and some of the cases that we're probably going to be looking at, it's going to be a little bit difficult because I have successfully tried no-body cases and I've tried three cases that were 30 years old. But those cases don't have the razzle-dazzle and, you know, some of the stuff that people are, you know, expecting to see because of their, you know, indoctrination from TV. That all being said, jurors, if you lay it out for them in advance that you understand this is a real case, this isn't CSI, and you get them to understand that going into a case, I have found that they're receptive to your arguments that appeal to common sense and logic, and that's where I try and go when we have a case like this. I mean, so much of the discussion earlier tonight was, you know, what about if we disagree with the coroner? Well, you know, in most high-profile cases I've had, there's two coroners that disagree, one for the defense and one for the prosecution. And as a prosecutor, that means common sense is where we have to, you know, lay our appeal. And, you know, that's what I seek to do in most of my cases.
And you do it very eloquently, and you are successful. Wouldn't you, I mean,
well, I work
you know, you don't see a lot. Well, I know you do, but, and you're a police officer's daughter, which, you know, I just learned that today.
Oh, is that right?
I didn't know that. And I
couldn't
figure out. 39 years,
my daddy was a cop. Oh, yeah.
I couldn't figure out, you know, I mean, I didn't know that. And that says a lot, doesn't it, Denny and Vito?
It certainly does.
that's for sure. Good genes there, Donna.
Yes, the law enforcement bent gene.
Well, it's interesting because, and you also write for Women in Crime, which, you know, Pat Brown's on there, Diane Diamond, Robin Sachs, Stacey Dietrich.
Oh, yeah, we have a dynamite team.
And I'm there. I'm coming back. I just haven't. I'm getting back in a groove. And
we're,
you know,
still waiting for you.
I'll be right there. But
uh-huh.
I've only been back for a couple of weeks as far as out there on these cases. And so it's really interesting the things that you guys cover that we're going to cover too. That a lot of the cases that you present, that you write about, that you're passionate about, that you've prosecuted, we're going to be highlighting these cases because a lot of them are unsolved, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And that is probably one of the biggest achievements of my career. When you can take a case that's 18 or 28, or like I said, I've tried three 30-year-old cases that, you know, basically the son of a gun thought they got away with it. You can come back and you can prove it and just see them led away in handcuffs after 30 years. That's really something. It's like, you know what, you got away with it for a long time, but you didn't get away with it.
And that's why CrimeWire is so important, because as you heard the show, these families calling in, giving their insights, and we appreciate you, Denny Vito and I, appreciate all that you do for these families, but that you're part of our team, and that's even a bigger accolade for us. So I'm honored, and
well,
we're honored.
I'm very excited about this endeavor, as we all are, so I'm glad to be aboard.
And we don't have much time, but we're going to have you back on because we're so we have to take the next person. So thank you and good night.
All right.
Thanks, Donna.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Denny.
Yes, Peter, are you on with us?
This is Alan Tressler.
Oh, I'm sorry. Alan, just a second. Is Peter?
I don't see Peter. I don't see him.
Okay.
But Al works. Wait a minute. Yeah, no, Al works. Go ahead, Denny.
Yeah, Al.
Yes.
Okay, welcome to CrimeWire.
Good to hear from you, Denny.
Vito, would you like to introduce Al?
Oh, wait, that's come on. Now.
Yeah. Al Dressler started out working for me. We've become, about 15 years ago, we've become partners in one business. He's my office manager in Colucci Investigations. And as the new technology has spread over the years, Al does many, many of our forensic things, which includes downloading the computers, telephones, cell phones, whatever it may be. And it's a pleasure to have him. I know we don't have a lot of time, Al, but can you just give a quick synopsis? See, what's going on tonight? The viewers need to know. This was started out tonight as just an introductory show of just introducing our experts that will be on a regular basis. But so many people are hurting out there that they called, which rightfully so, and it just shows the excitement and what needs to happen. I hope there's 20 different shows like CrimeWire, to be very honest with you. But Al, can you give us a little synopsis of what you've done lately?
Yeah, I mean, we started years ago with the computer forensic again, and that's probably going on 5 years now. We've been doing a lot of the computer forensic work, but now it looks like the future of the forensic work is in the cell phone forensics and gathering information like that.
Why don't you real quick explain what forensic is, because a lot of people don't really understand that. They think it's a whole bunch of different things when it's really not.
Well, yeah, I mean, make it pretty basic, if you have a computer, we'll go in and make a forensic copy, which is an exact copy of that computer hard drive. And like I was saying,
why is that important now? Why is that important on a case?
Well, the forensic data is something that can hold up in court because it's just a duplicate copy of the exact email or the exact data on that hard drive. So we don't change any of the data that's there. It's just a forensic copy, and again, it's used in court. But I think the criminals are getting wise to this, and we're getting less calls for computer forensics and more calls on the cell phone forensic ends, because people know that they'd rather use their smartphone, for their strategy or whatever they do criminally, and then they're able to either throw that out, get a new one, keep getting new smartphones along the way. So it seems like the criminals are maybe one and a half steps ahead of everything, but the cell phone forensics seems like where the computer forensics was started. It looks like that's where we are at this point.
And one last thought, Al. People need to check, investigators, lawyers, whoever it may be, people need to check the laws of each state to see what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. Is that correct?
Right. But if you are involved in a crime or you have something like this going on, if you can secure that device, and again, with an attorney or a private detective, licensed private detective, I think that's a great first step. Because even if you could secure it and the judge could order that to be looked into, then you're one step ahead of the game.
Well, I think Al is scheduled for a bit next week, too, right? Is that right, Susan?
Yes, he is.
Right. So, Al, we're going to cut you a little short because we have to wrap up over here. But thank
that's
you
all right.
Everybody.
It was great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And
thanks,
you know,
Al.
Enjoy what you guys are doing.
You know, thank you. This is our cue, guys, to close. We hope everybody stops in every week on Tuesday, 8 p.m. If you can't, listen to the podcast, spread the information, the news around. Our next show will be Tuesday, June 7th, 2010, at 9 p.m. Eastern. Tune in while we dissect, analyze cases, crimes, and people that interrupt and wreak havoc on people's lives. Vito?
Good night, everybody. Thank you very much. You'll
Denny.
See a more organized show as we take case by case starting next week.
Yes, thank you very much for tuning us in tonight, and we hope you're back with us every Tuesday, and it's going to be exciting. We sure hope you're on board.
And email us at thecrimewiresite@gmail.com. Visit us at www.crimewiresite.com. Look for our books and information. And, again, we're open to suggestions and how we can make the show better. Everybody, God bless and good night. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Peter.
Yes.
God, we got bollocked up here. We ran out of time.
Yeah.